This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. Protests over police violence against Black Americans have opened the conversation about the need for police reform and accountability. They've also opened the door much more broadly to conversations about the negative impacts racism has on other facets of life, from economic opportunities to housing, to our healthcare system, to education. The way that institutional racism affects educational outcomes for Black kids and other children of color has been widely studied and taught. Our next guest believes that the conversations need to happen on a larger scale and in the home. Dr. Tamila Brown is a middle school dean at River City Scholars Charter Academy in Grand Rapids. Dr. Brown, welcome to Stateside.
Thank you so much for having me.
You have said that education is the pressing civil rights issue. There are so many issues to choose from in this moment. I wonder if you could tell us a little bit more about that.
Absolutely. Education is our power. It helps us to make informed decisions. It helps us to be able to look at all the issues broadly to see what's going on, but to then make decisions about them, to talk about them, and to work for creative solutions that will benefit us all. We know that education also is the route to economic security, and whether that's formal education in college or trade schools or other opportunities, if children are not growing up with the opportunities that they need, then it creates a barrier, it creates a gap in what they're able to do. And so it is definitely a part of this bigger conversation. Sometimes it's not looked at by the masses. We assume that our education system is doing what it was designed to do. And for so many of our children, it is falling short.
Do you see our system as effectively remaining segregated?
I do. I think the education system has resegregated. I know we went through a period of integration that started out as a great opportunity and a good thought, and the desires and the intentions were all pure. However, as soon as we began the fight for integration, there was another fight that began that reintroduced segregation all over. So we saw white flight. We saw large school districts become urbanized, and children were then segregated again based on zip code, income. And so it didn't allow for the original intent for integration to happen. There are some unintended consequences from the decision of Brown versus Board of Education.
Can you tell us about the terms by which you frame a change in your own mind, if it's a question of reform or of a complete reconstruction of how we think about education in this country?
So in the research and the study that I've done, I've come up with what I'm calling an E3 strategy. We're really looking at experience, engagement, and exposure, rather than one structured approach where we have one teacher who can opt into doing something really well, and maybe the teacher down the hall isn't as much of a rock star. And so the kids who are able to be in the classroom where there's a rock star teacher benefit, but the other children don't. And so I'm proposing that we look at education and not necessarily get so bent out of shape on we have to integrate. And that is important because diversity is important, and diversity of thought and ideas and knowing how to function with people who are different than you. That's important also. But the exception to that is we have so many schools that are segregated, and what do you do? And so looking at this idea of experience, engagement, and exposure, the E3 strategy, it allows schools, no matter what your demographic is, it allows them to open up new opportunities for students and close that opportunity gap, which then has a direct impact on the learning gap.
Can you explain how it works?
So the experience is really about making the content and the instruction come alive to students. It's about immersing their culture. One of the pieces of my conceptual framework brought about culturally relevant pedagogy by Dr. Gloria Ladson-Billings. And so her idea was to bring in the culture of the children and validate it as learning and validate it as meaningful in the class. Classroom. And so you would have that, but you also have to have opportunities for kids to own the learning. And so that experience is all about getting our students into the content, but also making the content accessible to them completely. Engagement is all about how we connect to not just the students, but how we relate to their parents. And bringing the parents into the school as a real partner of learning and a partner of the school system, where we've had many of our parents, specifically minority parents or marginalized parents and low-income parents, who have not been welcomed into the fold of education. They've been kind of forced to fit in this middle class idea of what parent engagement involvement needs to look like.
Right.
Instead of making parents fit into that mold, really bringing the parents in as a partner, understanding what their needs are, how they can support the learning process, how they can support the school, but also how the school can support them and their children to benefit in the learning process.
Teachers who are engaged in a serious way in equity work will often say this, that engagement with families, that it's impossible to address the disparities in our system without that engagement with a student's entire family. Could you give us an example of maybe what that looks like, maybe with some of the middle school students that you work with?
So one of the things we did at my school was if a parent had an opportunity to pop into the school, we said to parents, if you're able to come in, we want to give you something that's meaningful to you. And so parents who were able to come into our school, even if that was an after school thing, they received what was like a gold coin. And they had an opportunity to go into a parent closet to get some things that was important for them, whether that was adding a book to a student's home library or a new uniform shirt or other items that we had that would benefit the home. And so it said to a parent, I really appreciate the time that you've invested back here in the school, and I want to show you that appreciation in practical ways that can support your family. Not just show up here to help us because, you know, that's what you have to do. And parents have so many things going on.
Especially now. Yeah.
Absolutely. So that was one of the ways. Another opportunity that we've had is to bring our parents in to not just hear what's going on with students from the teacher, but to put our students on stage. So things like student-led conferencing engages a parent in a very different way. It puts the student in the driver's seat. It makes the teacher now an advocate for the family to understand how to better support that student. So those are some of the things that we've done. We began this year with looking at parent home visits, even at the middle school level, to help the parent in whatever is the time that's most beneficial for you. When can we come? We want to be a part of your life and of your family, and not in an intrusive way. You tell us how we can support you, and you tell us how we can best benefit you so that you can be available to support your students' learning process.
You've addressed the engagement that is essential with parents, the engagement that's essential with students. I do wonder about what you found most effective in helping teachers develop more competency in this. Teachers are people. They come to the classroom sometimes with biases of their own. What have you found most effective?
Authentic relationships among teachers and teacher teams is going to be important because you have to start having conversations. And if you assume that well, you signed up to be at this school and you're going to make a commitment to a school where there is over 90% of African-American children. And sometimes we make an assumption that teachers who sign up for that, you know, they know what they're getting into and they've begun to deal with their biases. And that's not the case. Often teachers are looking for a job and they know they want to teach. And so having authentic relationships, having an accountable culture on a team is critical to starting those conversations about race and culture and how race and racism has affected education and how it affects the learning process when you have biases that are undealt with and you haven't even begun to explore your own issue or bias with the children that are sitting right in front of you. So I think authentic relationships among teachers, having an accountable team culture, but I also think having representation of marginalized or teachers of color on each team is going to be critical to establishing an open dialogue. The reason I say that is because when you have invested relationships among teachers and there is a culture of accountability and there are authentic relationships and there are people of color a part of those relationships, it doesn't allow the conversation to drop. If we have all white teachers in a room on a team having these conversations, quite possibly after we read the article, the conversation can fall off and drop. And there's not an opportunity for the different lived experience or the different perspectives that a person of color brings into that conversation that is invested in authentic relationships and accountable culture.
If you're just joining us today, my guest is Tamila Brown. She's a middle school dean at River City Scholars Charter Academy in Grand Rapids. So the third E in the E3 strategy is exposure. Can you tell us a little bit about what's meant by that?
Yes. So exposure is all about providing kids opportunities to see their future, to see things outside of their immediate sphere of influence. That looks like multiple field trips. That looks like bringing in professionals that look like them, taking students to the symphony and to the ballet, to the theater, to Washington, D.C., and spending the night in a hotel, giving them new experiences so they can understand that there are some different things out in the world than maybe what they are already privy to. That also looks like career days and bringing professionals in that looks like them, opportunities for them to even Zoom with other professionals, exposing them to different career opportunities. Often students don't know about being an ecologist or an environmentalist. You know, they know that there are doctors and teachers and lawyers, but helping them to see different things in the world helps them to close some of those gaps in their thinking and gaps in their learning just by being exposed.
It sounds like there's a balance to be struck here between making sure that your academic curriculum does speak to people's real life worlds and also encouraging them to expand those worlds when and where they can.
Absolutely.
I'm so interested by your personal experience of some of this. You spent part of your growing up years in a relatively small, mostly agricultural town in Michigan. Does a small town life pose a different set of challenges when we're talking about addressing disparity?
In some ways, it does. I had the pleasure of growing up in Covert, Michigan, which is a small town, a farmer's town, blueberry farms specifically. But one of the benefits was that it was a small bedroom community. Everyone knew everyone. The other major benefit was that I saw teachers that looked like me on a daily basis, staff members, bus drivers, and administrators that looked like me. And so growing up in Covert, I had an opportunity to engage who I was and engage my culture in a learning setting. But to your question, I think that there are definitely some differences in poverty in the inner city and poverty in a small farming community like Covert. Poverty has its set of challenges and norms across the board, but you also learned so much through that experience that you have a lot to bring into the classroom setting. And I think often that can be missed when schools are larger, when you don't have a good sense of cultural competence among the staff. And so while students are going through horrific challenges at home, they've learned how to persevere. They've learned how to be excellent problem solvers in real life issues. Those are valid, valuable skills in the classroom setting. And I think often they can be lost.
Tamila, you've got a lot on your plate now, trying to meet the needs of both your students and their families while thinking about closing up these disparities, not to mention all the things that you're doing for yourself and your family. How would you say things are going?
Even within myself, there's a level of anxiety that is created because there are so many unknowns. When I talk with my students, there's this uncertainty that they're facing with what do we do? What's going to happen? Is school going to be back in? Am I going to be able to see you? When we first shut down, one of our students said, I was so worried about what happened with the teachers. Even the anxiety about what's happening with the adults that are caring for you at the school. And so there's a lot of unknowns right now. It creates stress and anxiety for our young people. I think it creates stress and anxiety for our parents. And right now, I think we have to make the best decisions to keep kids safe and still provide opportunities for them to be educated, for them to learn. And I think there's a lot of decisions being made right now that are flexible because we don't know what's going to happen and we don't know how the virus is going to respond to cities and states opening up slowly. And we're starting to see a rise and an uptick. I think our priority needs to be safety for children. And then we need to give teachers an opportunity to prepare, to educate kids well, if we're not in school, if we're not in a face-to-face setting. So if schools don't go back face-to-face in a low-income community, what does that mean for our parents? And what are the community partnerships that we may leverage to support families? Are there community centers or organizations that can open up and provide a safe setting for students to learn if a parent has to go to work or if the home is not conducive for learning or if the child is experiencing homelessness in this season? So there's a lot to consider, and we have to think about so many different pressing issues, but also considering safety and life.
Tamila Brown, PhD, is middle school dean at River City Scholars Charter Academy in Grand Rapids. We've been talking to her from her home today. Tamila Brown, thank you so much for your work, and we wish you a safe rest of the summer and hopefully a safe return to school next year.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.